Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Can you just smell the blades of grass? The sense of training camp is in the air. 23 NFL teams reported today. We already saw some teams get underway yesterday. The Houston Texans, who we just talked about in the last segment, they were the first team ultimately to report as they're going to be facing off with the Chicago Bears in the Hall of Fame game coming up next week. Michael, this is what we live for. It is football season.
Love it. Yeah, this is the best time. I mean, players coming in, we have to deal with the holdouts, all that stuff. But, you know, we know we're back. I mean, this is training camp week one, and we'll start, you know, counting forward. We're no longer in that offseason mode, which is great. And now we can start looking at these teams and kind of handicapping them, because I haven't put together my power ratings yet. I've gone through every team. I've looked over every team, but I need to see something on the field before you start power rankings. I know we're not going to get a lot of the veterans in the preseason games, but I do think you'll learn about some of these teams and what rookies can make an impact. And you have to be careful not to judge too quickly, because I made this mistake last year. C.J. Stroud, that first game against New England, wow, was he bad. Was he bad in that game? And he came out of nowhere and he was great.
And you're also going to have the opposite side of that too, right? Where there are these preseason young quarterbacks who look like they're lighting it up, but let's remember they're playing second and third team defenses as well. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of those things that you have to take into account. Your discussion of power rankings, though, that'll be a good way to lead into our B block second segment here of the show. We're going to go through some training camp questions that Michael has for a handful of teams in the NFC side of things. Also a little college football, Big Ten and ACC media days underway. We're going to have a great guest coming up a little bit later on in the show. Dan Shoemate will join us. But let's kick off this starting about the Houston Texans, who I mentioned. They started training camp last week. We were talking about them with Harry Douglas last segment, which, by the way, if you missed any of our one, you can always download the Lombardi Line in podcast form wherever you get your podcast. And I was asking him the question that we talked about a ton in hour one about who he thinks could be in prime position to be one of the highest scoring offenses in the NFL next year. He said the Houston Texans are a team that's on his radar. They are, by the way, 20-1 in that market. But talking about all of the weapons that C.J. Stroud is going to have at his disposal, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs, who's been added, Joe Mixon in the run game. What's your evaluation of the Texans and also just the schedule that they're going to have this year coming off a division title?
You know, it's an interesting team, because I think when they first came out at 8.5, the win total, and then they went to 9.5 because they got Diggs, you wondered, like, what's going on here? But when you break this team down and you peel back the layers of their numbers, last year when they held teams to under 20 points, and they did it in 10 games, they were 9-1. When they didn't, they were 2-7. And I think one of the things that's fascinating about this Texan team is they were 21st in rushing attempts per game. They were 31st in rushing first downs per game. They couldn't run the ball. They ranked 31st in rushing yards percentage of their offense, meaning they had to throw the ball all the time. And this is an offense that has to create a passing game off of play action. It's the same offense that Kyle Shanahan runs. And yet they're faking runs. As Al Davis would say, why are we reacting to the run? They're never going to run it. You know, they only had 7 games of over 100 yards rushing. This is a passing team. And that being said, I think people will approach them differently as a passing team, and they're going to have to prove that they can run the ball. Joe Mixon was not the same back, hasn't been the same back for 2 years. So we'll see what happens. The other thing is defensively, right? Last year, Stormy, they ranked 30th in the National Football League and only allowing 10.6 incompletions per game. Only Carolina and Arizona was worse than they were. That's huge. It means the ball's only touching the ground 10.6 times in a game. And then when you add the fact that they played, I'm going to read them to you. Here's who they face: Minshew, Lawrence twice, Levis twice, Bryce Young, David Carr, Pickett, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, and Desmond Ridder. I mean, did they beat any elite quarterback in that group? That's the question that we're going to have to ask ourselves.
So, great point, Michael. The Houston Texans, a plus 105 favorite to repeat in the AFC South. They're minus 190 odds to make the postseason this year. A couple other quick training camp updates we have for you. Hassan Reddick, the new pass rusher for the New York Jets, will not report to camp, which I don't know why the Jets are acting like they're surprised about this. They knew before they went to trade for him that this was going to be a contract situation. Well, and also, real quickly, Michael, before you add on that, Brandon Ayuk, meanwhile, is not willing willing to take the financial hit, and he will show up to training camp, according to reports.
Yeah. As I said in the last block, he has no leverage. But for the Jets were told that there's that they're blaming it on Riddick. They thought Riddick agreed to a deal before he, you know, when they made the trade, and that he never signed it. Look, this is why you have to sign deals. If you're going to agree, you better make sure you get it in writing. Now, the Jets are blaming Riddick, saying he was going to do a deal, and he reneged on it, so they're going to blame the kid. Which is classic Jet, right? Blame Aaron Rodgers, even though Aaron Rodgers told you, I'm going to Israel. If I show up for all the OTA days, is that okay? Sure, no problem. Then you blame him and fine him. It's pretty much classic Jet.
Sounds about right. Very par for the course there. Aaron Rodgers, by the way, showing up to camp with an Egyptian cat on his T-shirt that he got on the trip. Joe Burrow, by the way, I can't believe I haven't brought this up with you, Michael. Have you seen Joe Burrow, what he looks like?
Oh, my God. I didn't even recognize him. I thought it was a character from Saturday Night Live. I wasn't sure.
Will the real Slim Shady please stand up? If you haven't seen it yet, head to Twitter. Joe Burrow, a bleached buzz cut, the look for him to start the 2024 season. The Bengals season win total set at 10.5. High expectations for them this year with Burrow back healthy, by the way, plus 145 in the division. The Eagles also reported to camp today, a team with high expectations, having been bolstered by a number of offseason acquisitions, including most notably, of course, Saquon Barkley, who comes over from the New York Football Giants. And Saquon has been talked about a lot recently because of his former team's offseason hard knocks that's been going underway with Joe Shane and the Giants. Barkley spoke to The Athletic's Diana Russini on the new Scoop City podcast about how things played out from his perspective. Take a listen.
I feel like the Giants thought I was going to go out there and get 9, maybe 8, stretch at 10, and then I'll come back to them. And it's like, all right, well, we got you. If you want to come play at 9, you come play at 9, which I think that's truly would have got it done. I think that's just where they valued me at, or Joe valued me at. That's what, he had a price point where he was willing to pay, and he wasn't going to go over to it. And, you know, kudos to him for sticking to his gut. But yeah, that's how I feel. And I kind of felt like it was like, you know, kind of a little disrespectful, to be honest, because it's kind of like a slap in the face. But you go see what you are worth, and then if you're worth that, we'll see if you're worth it, and maybe we'll match it.
You know, Michael, I haven't finished listening to this full episode, but I got through a good chunk of that interview this morning before the show. And you hear words like disrespected, felt like a slap in the face. He also said when he had that phone call with Joe Shane, where Shane told him to go test the market, that he was a little fed up at that point. And after that call, he felt like it was over for him and the Giants. It's, you know, it did not go down well, and he didn't like having to test the market. And he knew that Joe Shane wasn't going to match it.
Yeah, he knew all along he wasn't. Shane was happy he didn't want to take the deal. I think Shane wanted to sign Singletary all along. Yeah. I think that was one of the things he wanted to do from the beginning. And when you look at it, you know, and I wrote about this on VSiN.com on a column today. I mean, when you look at what Saquon was able to do compared to Singletary, it's really a stark comparison. And I, you know, I understand there's a price point difference here, but when you look at it, from that standpoint, you know, I mean, Saquon gained 400 plus yards at before contact. Then he gained another 400 plus yards after contact, whereas Singletary gains like 380 before contact. I mean, 500 before contact and then only 380 after contact. They're different backs, right? There's not power. And I think that Shane just didn't care about it. I think what happens is if you don't make an offer to a player, if you're not willing to make an offer to a player and he goes out in the market, you're just basically saying you're not going to bring him back, because unless he has nothing, he's not coming back to you. That's always been the case. When you let a guy go to the market without an offer, you're saying, I don't really want you. You know, if you let him go and say, hey, look, you see what you got, come back to us, we'll see what we could do. The player knows you don't want to get into the ballpark of the number, especially when you're asking him to take a pay cut.
Yeah, it's almost like outwardly Joe Shane was just trying to play the game to appease John Mara, who very clearly wanted
That's
to keep Saquon.
Doing.
Yeah, right?
That's all he was doing. He knew the owner wanted him. I mean, look, put an offer on the table or to franchise him. Just franchise him, you know, and go to, you know, Daniel Jones. You had no problem signing him. I love this. I think there was a quote somebody said, you know, because I said this at the time, Stormy, and I caught more crap, which I always do when it comes to the Giants. I caught more crap about it because of the, you know, what I said last year about the disease of me. I said, yep. Look, the Giants by going and, you know, look, and then here he said they paid Daniel, they paid Andrew Thomas, and they paid Dexter Lawrence, but they didn't pay me. Right? Once you pay Daniel, that was going to be a problem.
Yeah, and he said too, going through that and like watching a lot of his teammates get a deal done, he said, you were able to get a deal done with these guys. You could have gotten a deal done with me too. I wanted that, and then you guys elected to go this other route. And it's just, it's really interesting. It's nice to hear the player's side of things and his honesty and candor throughout that conversation. But obviously, he was over it with Joe. Shane said, okay, let's go test, go see what you're worth. Go see what you're worth. Because Shane, I don't know if he just expected that he wasn't going to get the offer he wanted, but Saquon bet on himself, and the market did deliver ultimately the price point that he was hoping for. We're going to hit the break here, Michael. When we come back, though, I do want to get to what's on Michael's mind. I went a little bit long here on the Giants, but what's on Michael's mind today about the Green Bay Packers, because there is a certain quarterback who is up for a new deal that could be a little bit ridiculous. We're talking highest paid in the National Football League despite only 1 year of on-field full experience. So excited to get into that. We'll also go through your biggest questions for teams in the NFC and a whole lot more this hour on the Lombardi Line. I'm particularly excited. End of the hour, we're going to do a Gridiron Goldilocks as well. Are these odds too high, too low, or just right for teams in the Big Ten, which is really the Big 18? We need to change all these conference names, Michael. I'm sick of it. I don't understand how a team that's literally called California is in the Atlantic Coast Conference. I have a lot of issues, neither here nor there. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. Stay with us.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, everybody, the NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football betting guide is next, dropping on August 1st. Now, only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts providing profiles for each and every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus, of course, best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July, and you'll receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits as well, all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount price of $175. The football special discount price expires July 31st, so don't wait. Get in there now. Head to vsin.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Again, August 1st, when that college football betting guide is dropping. We'll talk college football in a bit, coming up in about 15 minutes. Dave Shoemate, college football analyst, will join us at the end of the hour. We'll have a Big Ten Gridiron Goldilocks, but to start here, it's training camp report day for 23 teams across the National Football League. Michael, one of them being the Green Bay Packers, who, as we tee up here for what's on Michael's mind today, has to do with their young quarterback.
You know, I thought the Jordan Love contract was going to be a really hard contract to do because there's just not a lot of evidence to support that he's going to be an elite player. There's evidence to support that he improved. There's evidence to support that he's got a opportunity, but there's no evidence to support he's going to be a superstar. And I think one of the things that always worries you as an executive is you don't want to overpay for a good player. You want to overpay for a great player. I'm not sure Jordan Love's great. I'm really not. I think he's had moments of greatness. But if we're going to make him the highest paid player in the league, my question to you, Miss Stormy, is what do you think Brock Purdy ought to get if Jordan Love got this deal? What do you think Dak Prescott should get if Jordan Love gets this deal? Like, how, if you're Jerry Jones and you see this deal come across the table, or if you're Chris Greer in Miami, or if you're John Lynch in San Francisco, like, how do you pay this guy these kind of numbers when he was not even close to Brock Purdy? Not even close to Brock. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what the worldwide leader reports. I don't care what they talk about on Get Up. Like, they're full of crap. Brock Purdy is by far the better player than Jordan Love was. By far. Now, Jordan Love may become a better player, but to make him the highest paid player in the league without being able to go to a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, to me is just unbelievably caving on the Green Bay Packers' part. Look, I understand they made $400 million last year and they got to give money away. I get that. But to me, this is a little bit bold and reckless.
Well, and this is why I struggle with the comments from Tua Tagovailoa, for example, saying the market is the market, right? Because sure, I understand where the top of the market is at this point, but that doesn't mean we should just be giving away this money to everybody because they are a quarterback. We do, I think, need to see more from Jordan Love. He had half of a good season. And was it great? Absolutely. You could see the growth to your point. And they have seen him behind the scenes in the office, around the building, the way he interacts with his teammates, the offseason work he does, of course. So it's great to know that they do believe in him and are willing to buy in. But that's a lot of freaking money for a guy who hasn't really done anything yet. And you do look, I mean, Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl and an NFC Championship game, right? And look what he's making. And Jordan Love's going to exceed that. Jordan Love's going to exceed Joe Burrow. Jordan Love's going to exceed all of these guys. It definitely is a very wild thing to discuss, considering the sample size we have seen of him being really good is really small.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just doesn't, like, the one thing you always want to do when you do a contract, you say to yourself is, if this doesn't go good, where's the out? It's the same thing that happened. Look, let's have a real hard conversation here about the Cleveland Browns, right? I mean, the Cleveland Browns contract for Deshaun Watson. And look, I love Deshaun Watson coming out of college. I thought he was going to be a real good player, and he was at one time. But when you look at him over the 12 games career in Cleveland, to which he's got a $63 million cap charge that's fully guaranteed this year and next year, he's averaged 6.5 yards per attempt passing. He's had 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. In 2020, his success ratio was 54.5. Last year, it was 38.3. That's a drop of 15 points, which is astronomical in success ratio. But here's what's even more remarkable. Is Flacco in 5 games threw for 1,616 yards. In 6 games, Deshaun threw for 1,115 yards. They got to, you know, and so like they can't get out of that deal. It's the same thing that's going to happen to Jordan Love if he's not the player they think he is.
That's still one of the most wild storylines of all of last season for me, that Joe Flacco off the couch is more effective and efficient in your offense than Deshaun Watson. It's wild. Let's go to the article that you wrote today, Michael, about these NFC teams and the questions you have, because typically as we were approaching training camp, I was asking you my burning questions, but you have some very serious questions about a number of these teams. And because we're coming off of the Packers, who are the second shortest shot in the NFC North, let's go to the favorite in that division, in the Detroit Lions, who are a plus 150 price there. What's your biggest question mark, about the Detroit Lions this year?
Well, I mean, I think when you break down the Lions, you see that, okay, you break them down, you know that they're going to score. They're going to move the football. They've done everything smart. I mean, they didn't try to overpay for Jackson, the guard. They signed Kevin Zeitler, cheaper player, maybe not quite as good, but similar. So they're going to be good. They've improved their defense. They handled all those things, assuming they're correct in the evaluation, right? To me, the plan is good. Whether the execution of the plan turns out to be good, we need to see it on tape. But I think the question is, are they going to continue to pass up points, right? Last year, they had 40 attempts on fourth down. They were 52% in that area. They ranked number 2 in having the most fourth down attempts in the National Football League, and they ranked 32nd in field goal attempts. And this is a team that plays games in a dome. Like, they're passing up points. They're a little reckless. It cost them the game against the 49ers, clearly. And I think, to me, that's the biggest question about this Lions. Are they going to play it? I don't want to say play it safe because that's the wrong connotation, but are they going to play it smarter?
It's funny watching the wide receiver series on Netflix following Amon-Ra St. Brown and, of course, George Kittle and Deebo Samuel. So you see that NFC Championship game and they flash to the Amon-Ra St. Brown family whenever there is a situation where you think you might kick a field goal and like, it's Dan Campbell. They're going for it. The Lions, again, plus 150. How about the Chicago Bears keeping it in the NFC North at plus 265? What's your big question in Chicago?
Well, my question in Chicago is always going to be the question in Chicago is are they good enough on defense? Everybody loves their defense, but Montez Sweat comes in and leads the team in sacks and hurries last year. Who's going to be the complement to Montez Sweat? One thing about Matt Eberflus's defense, he requires the defensive front to dominate. I mean, when you look at the numbers compared to Indianapolis and Chicago, both play the same defense. Indianapolis was much better at getting after the passer. Both teams struggle in pass coverage because they're a zone-oriented team. They allow too many completions. And sometimes if you don't tackle good, those completions turn into long games. So I think they need another rusher. I think they need another player inside. They chose to take a receiver, good player, Rome Odunze, no problem, good player. They could have used a three technique more.
Win total for the Chicago Bears in 8.5. They're minus 120 odds on number to make the postseason this year. How about in the NFC South? I feel like with the Atlanta Falcons, there's been all of this offseason conversation about the quarterback, but you and I have talked a lot about their defense as well. So what's your big question in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, look, you know, I scream about their defense with Super Bowl winning general manager Terry Fontenot and his brilliance and Rich Kaiser, Sose McKay. They built this team. But who's going to get double teamed in the front seven? Can you tell me who? I mean, Calais Campbell. Think about this. Calais Campbell led their team with 17 quarterback hits. Micah Parsons had 33 for the Cowboys, right? And so, like, where are they going to create turnovers from? How are they going to create turnovers? They were 29th in the league in creating turnovers last year. They've added nobody really to their defensive front that's going to be able to command a double team. And last year, what saved them, which was remarkable, Stormy, this is really remarkable for a team. They were the third best third down team in football last year. They were the fourth best red zone team in football last year. Those two stats are the reasons why they were in games. And if they don't meet those standards, which is going to be hard for Haheem Morris, who's a very good coach, but Ryan Nelson did a great job last year. Third in on third down, fourth in red zone. To me, if that doesn't stay the same, this defense will even go further down.
They're a minus 120 odds on favorite to win the NFC South. Let's hit one more here. The longest shot in the division, the Carolina Panthers. What are you asking about Carolina?
Well, I mean, look, it's a real simple question. Bella, my dog, could come up with this one. In 11 games, in 13 games, they scored less than 20 points last year. 13 games, they scored less than 20. In 11 games, they scored less than 16. I mean, look, and the only two wins they had were both decided by 2 points. So they've got to figure out how they're going to score more points. And I think one thing for us as a betting network is we're going to be able to watch them in preseason and say, yeah, they're going to be able to score more than 20 points in just in games. They're going to be able to make some plays. I think the preseason evaluation for Carolina will be critical.
Well, and the thing about that offense that I feel like I'm going to be looking the most closely at is the money that they allocated and invested in the offensive line going to pay off? Are they going to be able to ultimately protect Bryce Young? Because we know that unit could not do well last year. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Shifting gears from the NFL to a little college football. Excited to have Dave Shoemate join us on the program, college football analyst. There is a prop out here in Vegas right now. Ohio State and Georgia versus the field. Who you taking? We'll find out Dave and Michael's answer when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved mobile-friendly VSiN.com each and every day on the website. Best bets from all of our show hosts, experts, and analysts. Updated betting splits, exclusive articles, including columns from our own Michael Lombardi each and every week throughout the football season. A new one up today. The biggest questions on teams in the NFC. Also betting tools, betting guides, and so much more. Head to VSiN.com today. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bond, and Tony with you as we switch gears and get into a little college football talk here on the Lombardi Line. Dave Shoemate, college football analyst, former college football director of player personnel, now contributor for SEC Unfiltered, joins us here on the Lombardi Line on the Progressive Guest Line. Dave, how are you today? Thanks for spending some time with us.
Hey, good. So I appreciate you and Mike having me. How's everything going with y'all?
Great. Been raving about you in the commercial break. So, Michael, why don't you take us off here?
Well, I think the guide's incredible. I think anybody who wants to get caught up on college football, along with our betting guide, Dave's guide, is tremendous. It goes through all the key roster addition players, and then it also has the top high school recruits that you're going to see. So you get a great balance. Let's start off with the Southeast Conference. If I were to say to you, I think Jalen Milroe's undervalued, would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I would 100%. Yeah, if we were going to talk future Heisman or anything, I think he would be in that, Mike, just because of the history. Kalen DeBoer's done quarterbacks. When I was at UCF, we were thinking about taking Michael Penix. He was coming off those injuries at Indiana, the shoulder, and I think he had the knee. And we didn't know if we could really do anything with him. He goes to Washington, comes down to us, see what Kalen DeBoer did with him. I thought that was incredible, what he did with some of his guys at Fresno State. I think that Mike hit the hammer on the head with it. I think I expect to have a year with him entering first Kalen DeBoer next year.
And he is a 15-1 shot to win the Heisman Trophy this year, the sixth shot on the odds board. When you left hearing all of the SEC media days, coaches, players, everybody talking, I'm just curious from your standpoint last week, was there any team that your mind got changed about from hearing from all these coaches and players?
Stone, I think it's a good question. I would probably say probably twofold here. Question. I love the confidence with Sark in them at Texas. I feel like he came in. First of all, his Coke game was incredible. I'm not a big orange guy, but the Coke game was awesome. I like Texas's mentality. I think they're embracing that, hey, like, we are coming to the league. We're going to be hunted. But if there's a team from a I think it's floating in that mid-range of the SEC. I think everybody kind of has Texas in that top four. Probably Tennessee. I mean, I like what they did with Nico Amalabay at the quarterback position. If they can figure out some depth, the running back position, they brought in Tulane transfer Chris Brazell, who's going to do a good job there. Squirrel White, Brew McCoy being back. Because, you know, they run a bunch of those tunnel screens. It's essentially an extension of their run game. So Brew McCoy being hurt last year, he was a big physical guy. Squirrel White, a slot guy, he can't block in the perimeter. I think McCoy coming back will help. I think they may have one of the top three defensive fronts in the league. I mean, they probably have, heading into the season, the best defensive player in James Pierce. I think he's going to get a lot of doubles, which will help the other DN, Joshua Josephs over there, redshirt freshman. I think he's going to have a big year. If Keenan Peely, their BYU inside backer, stays healthy, who got hurt last year, Tennessee's going to have one of the better fronts. Rodney Garner is one of the better defensive line coaches. Was at Georgia when David Pollock was there, Auburn when Derek Brown, Marlon Davidson was there. He's always coached big-time guys up front. He's got that level of guys there. There are question marks in the secondary, like it's been. I mean, Jermaine McCoy, the transfer from Morgan State, is probably going to man it. But listening to Josh Heupel, you can tell he talked about that secondary a little bit more optimistically than he had in the past. Again, I don't think it's going to be some lockdown secondary that potentially Ohio State has, but I think it can be serviceable. So I'm a little bit higher on Tennessee. I think they're at that 9-3, 10-2 mark. I feel probably a little bit more confident in them after leaving media days.
All right. There's nobody. I mean, Ohio State spent a ton of money, and we know certainly that some other schools, but no one's really probably could compete with Ole Miss and what Lane's been able to do there. And we really won't know how good Ole Miss is until they travel to LSU in late October. But where do you think LSU? I know in your guide you have them only losing one game to Georgia, and their schedule is really fairly easy. Like I said, LSU on the road's tough. They got to go home against Oklahoma. They go to Arkansas. Georgia they have at home, which gives them an advantage. So where do you see them, and do you think they'll make 12? You think they'll make the playoffs?
Yeah, Mike, to answer your question, I think Ole Miss and Missouri, out of the true contenders, have the most beneficial, probably Texas you could throw in there, but truly Ole Miss and Missouri have the beneficial schedules that the other teams in the league have. I think the stars aligned for Ole Miss this year. They went all in on the portal. They got more depth on the offensive line than they've had probably in my lifetime up there. I mean, they added two Washington transfers, the Diego Pounds, and the name escapes me for the other one. Jeremy James has played every position on the offensive line except center. He's fighting for a starting spot. Jackson Dart's in his third year with Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr. Brought in Juice Wells. I know he was out for South Carolina last year, but probably one of the more productive receivers in the league 2 years ago. Jordan Watkins is back. They had Trey Harris back. They had a big year from La Tech. I think Quinshon Judkins was good. I don't think that's going to be as big of a loss as a lot of people are talking. I like Ulysses Bentley, the kid they had last year. He's back. If you go back and look at his 2020 season with SMU, when Sonny Dykes and them were there, the COVID season, I think that's what you're going to see. I think he's going to be close to 1,000 yards. Similar to Trevor Etienne at Georgia, the Florida transfer, he's going to be used a lot out of the backfield. And I think Ole Miss up front on defense has as much depth as anybody, probably outside of Georgia and maybe a little bit Texas. If they stay healthy, if Ole Miss can go win that LSU game at Tiger Stadium, I have a hard time seeing them losing three out of their last seven. I mean, the toughest game, and I think the team that's kind of on that fringe in the SEC, it could affect a lot of teams' schedule, whether good or bad, is Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma, on paper, if they can get the offensive line figured out, should be pretty good this year. But they're on a lot of the contender schedule. They play Alabama, they play Ole Miss, they play Texas, they play Missouri. Depending how Tennessee, I mentioned, they play that's the first conference game for both teams. If Oklahoma can get it figured out, that makes some team schedules harder. If they're in that 6-6, 7-5 range, it'll be interesting. But to answer your question, Mike, I think Ole Miss is firmly in the playoffs. I think it's wild to say if Ole Miss doesn't make the playoffs, it would be a very disappointing year in Oxford.
Our producer Elliot will kill me if I don't ask you about the Missouri Tigers. And as you talk about schedules, their schedule and the teams they avoid could set up really nicely for Mizzou if they play to the caliber that they did last year in an 11-win season. How are you evaluating Eli Drinkwitz's squad?
Yeah, so my good question. I like Missouri, especially in offense. They really benefited off it. They didn't have a lot of injuries up front last year. I like Armand Membo, the right guard. I think he's one of the better offensive linemen. They got a Oklahoma transfer, Caden Green. It's going to be one of those tackle spots for them. Brady Cook, I see some people ranking him as a top quarterback in the league. I don't know if I believe that, but he is a good product of Eli Drinkwitz, Kirby Moore's system. Luther Burden, I think, is the guy that's probably going to have the best shot out of all nine quarterbacks to win the Heisman this year. The way they line him up outside, inside, in the backfield, they've used him as Wildcat before. He's going to get touches. The question isn't on offense for me from Missouri. I think they're going to be really good on offense. The question could be defense. You lost your best players at all three levels. Corey Batoon, the new DC, is coming in from South Alabama. They lost three coaches all at LSU: Blake Baker, Kevin Peoples, and their safety coach. Forget his name off the top of my head. But they're all at LSU now. So on defense, you lost probably your best three players at all three levels, and you're replacing three out of your four coaches. You could maybe take a step back. Stormy, to your point, their schedule is as manageable as possible. Circle that Kyle Field game. Maybe October 12th off the top of my head. They're similar to how I mentioned the Ole Miss game against LSU. If they win that game, I don't know if I see them losing three out of the last seven. And I keep saying the three out of the last seven for people listening. If you go 10-2, I think there's a good shot. Now, 10-2, we have a lot of 10-2 teams in the SEC. Some people are projecting that. That could hurt Ole Miss and Missouri because the strength of schedule is not going to be there. But I think if Missouri goes and wins at Kyle Field or October 12th, I mean, they got Oklahoma left. They do go at Alabama. But say they lose to Alabama, I think they would still have to go lose two more. I still think Oklahoma is that swing team in the league. They're not going to really compete for the league, I think, this year. I like what Brent Venables and them are doing, but I think they are going to have a say in who wins it.
Yeah, Dave, we have about 2 minutes left. Oregon have a chance to beat Ohio State in the Big Ten?
Shoot, Mike, I think they may play three times this year. We actually have that in our magazine. I can see them playing in the regular season, Big Ten title, and in the college football playoff. Yeah, I think they could. The big question mark for me with Oregon, I know he's got one of the higher Heisman odds. I was with him at UCF. Dylan Gabriel, does he kind of have, for a lack of a better term, the kids use these days, kind of that – does he have that dog in him, for a lack of a better term? Because that's can he play through injury? That was always kind of our issue there, like kind of forcing him to play when he wasn't 100%. As we all know, you're not 100% the first day you put on the pads for practice. After that, you're not 100%. He's my question mark. They lost some guys on defense, but I do like what Dan Lanning and them are doing. I think they could get Ohio State once. That first game's at Autzen Stadium. I would lean Oregon probably wins that game. But I think ultimately Ohio State is the class of the league. I mean, I think the Big Ten's Ohio State, Oregon gap, and let's see what Penn State and Michigan do after that.
Yeah, that's a pick'em game where things sit right now. Dylan Gabriel, by the way, plus 750 favorite. He leapfrogged Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers in the Heisman Trophy odds. 20 seconds with you. There's a prop here in Vegas. Ohio State and Georgia versus the field to win a national championship. It's the same odds each way. Who would you take?
I feel confident Georgia or Ohio State. One of them wins it
really?
Against the field. The other three contenders I'd probably throw would be I'd probably throw Oregon in there. Oregon, Ole Miss, and Texas would be the other ones. But I feel confident in the field. This is an NCAA basketball tournament. Depth will matter, and even in the playoffs with potentially 17 games, I like the two teams with the best depth.
That music is telling me we got to wrap it up.
Great
but
job,
thank
David.
You so much for your time, and we will be bugging you again this college football season.
Appreciate y'all. Thanks for having me on.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
July is ending with a bang. UFC 304 has not just one, but two titles on the line. And you can get your own crown when you jump in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN. That's VSIN for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. We are wrapping up this edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Let's talk a little college football here. We got ACC and Big Ten media days underway from Charlotte and Indianapolis, respectively, in the Big Ten. We're up to 18 teams now with some additions from the Pac-12 in Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA. Between the new teams and other coaching changes, there's 7 new coaches in the Big Ten as well, and eliminating divisions. So a lot of change in this conference and many others across the country, Michael. But I think the Big Ten is going to be really, really fun at the top this year. How about you?
Yeah, I do too. I mean, look, you know, what we said earlier in the show, the 3 winningest teams in the Big Ten have been Michigan, Ohio State, and Iowa. No one ever wants to count Iowa because they're boring, you know, but they're good. They always play well. They surprise people. I think Nebraska can be a sleeper team. They might have the best quarterback no one's ever heard of in Dominic Riola, who's got size. He can throw from the pocket. They're going to have good skill players. We don't know what Penn State Drew Aller is going to become. I mean, Penn State's always hyped up. They've got a lot of talent on the team. What will they be like? And then there's SC Lincoln Riley sitting out there, you know, who tried to get out of the LSU game this year because he, you know, the competition's going to get a lot more intense. And we're going to see if the defensive changes made by USC is going to benefit them. But I think it's a 2-team race with Oregon, Ohio State. Those 2 teams are at elite level. Dave just said in the last block about, you know, Dylan Gabriel, will he play hurt? Well, if you're Oregon, you also have Dante Moore, who's the backup quarterback, who was a 5-star, went to UCLA last year. So if Gabriel gets hurt, you still have another player who's a 5-star behind him. This team's talented at Oregon.
Yep, they certainly are. And to your point, in the top of this conference, there's some options. It's not just Ohio State's to lose. Oregon is up there. And if Drew Aller can be good and they can push the ball downfield, maybe Penn State would have the opportunity to contend. But let's go through a few of these teams one by one here. And we play this a lot, whether it's college football or NFL, but gridiron Goldilocks. I'm going to present some odds to you and see if you think they're too high, too low, or just right, looking at some of these season win totals. And let's start at the top with Ohio State. Yes, they lose Marvin Harrison Jr., but an embarrassment of riches talent-wise when it comes to this roster. Ryan Day wants a national title. He wants to get the recent Michigan losses off of his back. He ceded play-calling duties to Chip Kelly this year. Will Howard from K-State replaces Kyle McCord at quarterback. Defense should be stout. You look at their win total, Michael. Over-under set at 10.5, minus 150 to the over. Too high, too low, or just about right at that 10.5 win total for the squad?
Well, I think it might be too low, right? I think, you know, it might be too low. Look, yep. Will Howard comes in from Kansas State, threw 24 touchdowns, 10 interceptions last year. You know, gives them stability at the position. Junkins, the running back from Ole Miss, had 1,100 yards in the Southeast Conference last year. He scored 15 touchdowns. Not too bad for Ole Miss, right? Then they get a starting center from Alabama. And then, you know, one thing about Ohio State, they're going to have 5-stars everywhere. Mm-hmm. They have the 5-star kid, Jeremiah Smith, who they signed coming out of high school. So this is loaded. And one thing, too, I think not mentioned enough, is their defensive staff has stayed together for 3 years. And this defensive staff has continuity. And there's a lot of players within the system, which helps them tremendously and gives them the benefit.
They are the betting favorite, of course, in the Big Ten at plus 155 odds, and they're being bet as such. 70% of the handle, 84% of bets coming in on Ohio State. And just because I think this is fun and important to reference, Ryan Day as a head coach at Ohio State, 55-5 against programs not named Michigan, 40-0 in the Big Ten against programs not named Michigan. 1-3, though, against the Wolverines. So if there was a year for them to get back on top and to beat Michigan, it's this year with Jim Harbaugh moving out of the conference. But let's go to Oregon, because they are the second most bet team in the conference, 13% of the handle and 10% of bets. So obviously a stark difference in terms of the people that are coming to the window to bet this squad. First year in the conference, looking to contend. ESPN FPI, Michael, actually has them as the top team in the conference and second only to Georgia in the entire sport. What do you think about their win total at 10.5? Because whereas you have Ohio State minus 150 to the over, it's an even money price on the over for the Ducks.
Well, I think the Ducks are understanding my son coaches there, but they have unbelievable talent offensively. They get Evan Stewart, the kid from Texas A&M, who was a tremendous receiver, you know, 38 catches and 514 yards last year. They have Jordan James, who's a really good running back, Tez Johnson, who was on their team last year, who's really outstanding, and then to go along with 2 quarterbacks that have unique ability. But the strength is Oregon has been their offensive line. I mean, that's the other thing. And then defensively, you know, they've added a lot of players to their defense in terms of helping themselves. So they added a safety from Kansas State, Savage. They've added a corner from University of Texas, San Antonio. And then they've had players that were back. So 50%, 60% of their defense returns from last season. They stumbled against Washington twice. I think Dan Lanning's a really good coach. I think this is a team that will be very tough to beat. And I agree with Dave that we might see Ohio State, Oregon three times next year.
And the resources, Michael, might be unlimited with Phil Knight and that Nike money. He's 86 years old. He's putting all of the money that he can into this program so that they can win some of those NIL battles, get recruits, get all of the things. So if not this year, in the near future, it certainly feels like a national championship is in range for them. Plus 850 to win a national title here this coming season. How about Penn State? So we go from a coach in Dan Lanning, who everybody raves about, to James Franklin, who everybody says can't win the big one. The Nittany Lions, Michael, have had a top 12 finish in six of the last eight seasons, but have never made a college football playoff. This is obviously an expanded field in 2024. Can they get over the hump and get in the playoff? Their season win total has been bet up from 9.5 to 10.5. Too high, too low, or just right?
Well, you know, they made changes offensively. They made changes defensively. And the coaching staffs, Manny Diaz left to go to become the head coach at Duke. But, you know, they need to get Drew Aller to play at a high level. Mm-hmm. And I think to me, this is the right number because I just don't know if they're good enough to win these close games. They just haven't done it. I mean, they open up the season. They have so many easy games. Now that the first time we're really going to know about them is when they travel out to USC and play USC. Can they play out there on the West Coast? Then they play Wisconsin away. They have USC, Wisconsin away before they get Ohio State at home. And that's going to be a whiteout up at State College. But to me, that we're going to find out, are they good enough, especially at SC? Because if they can beat SC, they will come in to the Ohio State game undefeated. They should. I mean, they got West Virginia, Bowling Green, Kent State, Illinois, UCLA. If they beat USC and Wisconsin, they're undefeated coming into that game. And we'll know more about it. But it really starts and ends with Drew Aller. They've got to find a way because defensively, they were good enough. I mean, they played Michigan as good as anybody. They played Ohio State as good as anybody defensively. They just couldn't get the ball down the field or work the football. Couldn't convert third downs. I think that's going to be the key for them.
Yeah, and hey, I wouldn't overlook going to Morgantown week one at West Virginia either. That's not going to be quite the gimme that on paper it might look like. But Penn State, another one of these crazy stats since 2014, 4-16 against Michigan and Ohio State, 80-18 against everybody else. They have not been able to win their two-game schedule. Now you're throwing Oregon into that. Fortunately, though, because they're getting rid of divisions, no Michigan on the schedule for Penn State this year. Let's go to USC because you've referenced them a lot coming off back-to-back winning seasons under Lincoln Riley. Couldn't get where they wanted to go last year in the final season with Caleb Williams. Their win total is just 7. Too high, too low, or just right?
I actually think it's just right. I think there's a lot of pressure on Lincoln Riley out there. A level of comp, like I mentioned, tried to get out of the LSU game, didn't want to play that game to start the season. You know, that's a tough game. And where are they defensively? I think that's the fair question. Like, where are they? Is Lincoln Riley's teams ever going to be good enough defensively? You know, are they? I mean, I think that's a fair question to ask. And hired the defense coordinator from UCLA to come in and try to coordinate the defense. But it hasn't been. They've taken transfers from all over to try to help them. They've got two UCLA transfers that transferred across town. Vanderbilt defensive tackle Clifton came in. So they've got a bunch of new players. Are they going to be tough enough, physical enough to be able to handle it? I think that's going to be the real question is, and when it gets cut and when it gets down to it, are they going to be? I mean, they week three of the season, they got to go back to USC. They got to go back to Michigan. And I think anytime this team goes into the Big Ten in the Midwest, I don't think it's a pushover page. I really don't.
What Elliot and I said about the defense is Lincoln Riley's defenses are always going to be as good as their defensive coordinator. So how will Danton Lynn truly be leading this group? He did bring UCLA's defense from 87th to 11th in a year. They also went from 111th in expected points allowed per game to 8th and hired the former FCS North Dakota State head coach Matt Entz to coach their linebackers. So ideally, the coaching staff will do what they need to do to improve that side of the ball. That's a wrap for us today. This show went by fast, Michael. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you, Stormy.